Hello and welcome to ELT Under the Covers Teaching Methodology. Today we are doing communicative language teaching.
What's that?
But first, introductions.
I'm Neil of Team Teacher.
Hello everybody, it's Professor Rich.
Communicative language teaching, Rich. what is it?
So you kind of you talk about stuff and learn at the same time.
Really?
That it's sounds basically great. A way that someone with no experience and qualifications can get a job as a language teacher and fool people into thinking that it's effective in some way. No, it's not. It's a revolution in language teaching, isn't it?
But to the untrained eye, it might look like that.
To the untrained eye, it might look like that. And to be fair, there are classrooms called communicative language teaching, which very much feature someone just having a chat with students.
Yes. And that's why, before we dive into an analysis of communicative language teaching, we're going to do a little bit of an introduction to it. So we kind of got a clearer idea of what we mean by communicative language teaching. Communicative language teaching, CLT, is an approach to language teaching that emphasizes interaction, communications as both a means and the ultimate goal of study. This communicative approach emphasizes building fluency in giving learners the language knowledge they need in order to perform specific communicative functions in the real world, often through practicing different real-life situations. CLT teachers choose classroom activities based on what they believe is going to be most effective for students developing communicative abilities in the target language. Some examples of these are role play, interviews, group work, pair work, information gaps, opinion sharing, scavenger hunts, to name a few. It's less of a methodology per se and more of a mindset for the teacher to approach making the new language applicable in learners' lives rather than just a subject that they study. So communicative language teaching, it's very much an amalgamation, isn't it? We've looked at the silent way, we've looked at Suggestopedia, we've looked at community language learning, we've looked at TPR, total physical response. It takes a bit of all of those, it adds linguistics in there. There's no, from what I could find, a method, a format that you have to adhere to in the same way that you would with those classical methods that I mentioned. But there is very much a framework and an idea that the focus really should be on the students, on them producing communication and ways to make it, I feel, just functional and useful in real life. It's not grammar translation. It's what do you need in order to communicate in this particular setting that you have. And often we can change CLT to match that. So CLT we could apply to business English, we could apply it to, you know, if you wanted to be a air steward, you know, you take the techniques and the principles, you do that. Or if you're doing that and you're a new immigrant to a new country, you can apply it in different ways. So it's flexible, but also it can be rigid, and it really depends on the teacher and the skill of the teacher.
It's kind of a marriage of the material, the object of study itself, which is to study these communicative aims. You want the students to be able to learn how to do stuff in English, and methodology, pedagogical methodology, being that actually communicating itself is a way to learn something. In other words, when you talk about something, you tend to kind of learn it, right? And that's why it's so perfect, in particular for language teaching, this communicative approach, because it is both the object of study and a way in which things are learned.
It's like a, almost like an immersion in a way.
It kind of is, yeah, it kind of is an immersion, or at least it's like a practical approach, you know? It's like going into a guitar class. And rather than sort of learning the theory of the scales, you know, everyone picks up a guitar and the teacher says, okay, now sort of make this chord and the person next to you play these notes at the same time, right? It's like doing a guitar class where people are jamming.
Yeah.
Only also the actual act of jamming is something that causes learning. In fact, it might well be memorable at the very least. So... You often have these sort of communicative aims, don't you, in communicative language teaching? And I remember the way I always used to think about it back when I was a newish teacher. And when you approach lessons as a newish teacher, you normally have like some language in mind that you want to teach. Now, I still sometimes find myself in that situation, although I prefer to not be in that situation. I prefer the language to kind of come from the communicative aim. But, you know, newer teachers do tend to have the language first. Like, oh, I want to teach can, or I want to teach the present perfect, or I want to teach the future, or whatever. And then what I used to do is, and I think what a lot of people do, is you kind of think, well, in what situations is that language used? What is the what are the real situations when we use that? And that becomes your communicative activity. So if we take something like can and we say, well, let's say we're using can't for permission. Well, we can think of a situation when people would use that when they're talking about, for example, rules in a classroom, or if they're talking about things that you're allowed to do in a hospital. You know, you can't smoke here, you can't do that. And then you just have to think of an authentic communicative situation where someone will be talking about that. You know, off the top of my head, you have the board of directors of the hospital reviewing the current rules that they have and discussing which ones are would be good to be included and which ones wouldn't. Another possibility would be a role play between a parent and a bunch of children who keep breaking the rules. And as they break one of the rules, then the parent has to say, you can't shout, you can't hit that other person. That's probably not such a good example because you're going to have students hitting each other. But you get this is the idea. The idea is that you want to, as much as possible, you want to get an authentic, real, communicative situation, bring it into the classroom. And as you mentioned in the video, that could be done with role plays.
Yeah.
And role plays can be fun and interesting. Or it could be done in a real, authentic situation. For example, if you're having a debate and two of the students feel particularly strong about a subject and the language in question there might be expressing opinion or disagreeing. And that was a great situation because someone's really living that then. They're actually having that conversation and they really feel very motivated to want to use and remember that language because that is the thing that enables them to communicate precisely what they wish to communicate.
Yeah, so we kind of start out at this level of it, these activities, we'll say, start out as kind of contrived, you know, they're not real situations, they're just these fabricated situations in order to kind of practice the language. But then if we, as we get to higher levels, we can touch on language or actually elicit language from the students that we know that they want or they need, and then they can actually apply that in their lives, in the classroom, you know, as you say, like in a debate where they actually, they're feeling that they need, they're not pretending or fabricating their opinion or about rules, but they're actually feeling or trying to communicate their actual thoughts with the new emergent or new language that we're going over. Right, so it's rather than it's kind of a pretend playing with the language, it's real.
Yeah. I always feel like that's the ideal situation. Role play is sort of a substitute for that, and you sort of get more synthetic ones along the way, which can still work. You know, I mean, you can get into game territory, can't you? And a bit more sort of, I don't know, pseudo task-based territory, like if you're asking someone to plan a robbery or something like that, and they're having to use certain language such as, then I'll do this, after that we'll do that, until that happens we can't do that. And yeah, I mean, it's not a real situation, it's using a bit of imagination, but if it's fun, then the students can still get into it and it can still work.
Yeah, and you know, there are benefits to that we've mentioned before. You know, it being very engaging, very fun, and also, especially if you're doing role plays, it allows students to remove these identities that they bring into the classroom and assume a different identity that allows them to express themselves in different ways, especially from cultures where they're a little bit more reserved. But I think what would be best now is to actually kind of look at what we've been discussing in action. So we're going to go back to the 70s and look
at... You're going to put in like a graphic.
Yeah, go definitely.
Back to the future.
Money! Great Scott! And we're going to look at... one of these classes in the 70s and how they did it, and it evolved from that.
And this unit will be focusing on a new function, persuasion. How do you convince people to believe in your point of view? Okay, I think
interesting.
This will be a useful skill
for giving the language objective
work and
before even doing it
in the larger world in everyday life. And the topic.
So this is signposting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about what's going to come next through the class.
I find adult students like that quite a lot, that they kind of know what we're working towards. And I remember in my CELTA, they were particularly on it about that. I don't know why, but...
I've always thought that it's a good idea to signpost, but with a mind to also keep in intrigue where possible. And I'm reminded actually of a thing I saw on Nick Peachy's LinkedIn feed the other day, which was something along the lines of, there's no better way than to kill a student's curiosity than to tell them what they're going to do next. Now, I think there are better ways to kill a student's curiosity, actually. But the point is made. And I always kind of bear that in mind when I'm signposting. So I want to tell them, yeah, we're going to do this, and you're going to learn this kind of stuff, but with a mind to sort of not giving the game away.
Yeah. I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a magician's trick. You've got the, you know, the fake out, the turn, and then the prestige. So...
Yeah, that's what we like to pretend English teaching is like.
Yeah. Oh, we are talking about persuasion, but it's kind of like the monkey's paw. You know, it's not the persuasion that you want. Yeah, you wanted peace on earth. Everything's now quiet. Bah! Not what you thought, isn't it? Prestige. Yeah, I see what you... I agree, though. It's very... but I'm also in the mind of kind of like the Hitchcockian way where there's this famous idea where he says, show the bomb, you know. No, don't just have the bomb explode after the scene. Show the bomb, do the scene, have the bomb explode after it. So that's kind of how you create suspense. And I think there's ways to do that in the classroom as well. Like I mentioned, kind of putting a different skew on it, you know, so maybe they're persuading, but they're persuading in a way that they don't want to or something. I don't know. And it really depends on kind of the language that you're covering as well. You might not be able to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
That we'll be using to work on this art or skill of persuasion will be the best place to live. We're going to talk about different kinds of living situations. Okay? Now, it so happens that my family is facing an important decision on this topic, the best place to live. And I'll tell you the reason why. Like many American families, maybe some that you know, my family, we all started out together. I grew up in New York City, and of course everyone was together. And then, as the children grew up, we spread out all over the country. And now we live hundreds or thousands of miles from each other. Why do you think, can you guess maybe why the children move to different places? For work?
Because studies.
Studies.
Yes.
They got married and they moved away.
Yeah.
Vacation? Yeah. Well, my
just stay there.
Florida once, and they liked it, and they decided to move there. Okay, so now the situation is this. My parents, Bill and Sarah, live in South Florida. I live in Western Massachusetts in the country with beautiful hills and streams and fields all around. My brother Charlie moved to a big city, Philadelphia. How many people have been to Philadelphia? Just a few. Okay, it's not too far from Washington. And my sister went to Wisconsin, to Madison, which is a small city, for her studies. And she liked it, and she stayed there. Now, here is the problem. My parents are tired of living so far from the children. They would like to get back together, at least for a while, with one of the children. The question is, which place to go to? Since they love each of the children equally, their decision is going to be based on which is the best place to live, a big city, the country, or a small city or town.
This is actually really good.
Yeah, really I really good. Like it. I really like yeah. it. You know, it started out where, and I'm like, he's talking quite a lot. And then the idea came out and he's like, well, why, as soon as he said, why are they all spread out? And you can see the students, they're like, well, I mean, it's obviously, and they're kind of talking a little between themselves and you're like, have you experienced it? Oh, you've probably got kids. You know, you feel the energy start to pick up a little bit and you can feel the intrigue kind of grab. And then the way that he sets it out and describes each, you know, it's good. And you can see that they're engaged and it's got context.
And it's such a cool sort of inventive situation that's a little bit out of the box and is probably based on something in his real life. And I always find that that's one of the best things to draw upon for planning lessons, you know. I remember one of my most kind of successful, enjoyable lessons recently was just based on a conversation I had with a couple of friends about having a barbecue on the beach. And, you know, it turned into this whole lesson about problems and solutions, you know, because we had to carry the barbecue down to the beach and we didn't have a car, or the one guy with a car didn't want to drive because he wanted to drink at the beach. But the barbecue we had was quite heavy, so it was kind of like, oh, what should we do? Should we take it in turns to carry it? Should we get a taxi? Should we, you know, not take the barbecue and buy one of those disposable things? You know, And it turns into this kind of language for making suggestions, you know, because they say to the students, well, what's the best thing? And it's just the fact that it's such a kind of unique, you know, it's just, it's different than that kind of like, okay, now we're going to role play a job interview. You know, it's like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah. And so this is kind of what this is kind of, it's actually a pretty good example of what I was talking about where, you know, signposting is not that bad if it's got that little bit of the twist, that little bit of prestige. Because the way, you know, the way I had it in my mind is like, oh, he's going to talk about persuasion. I thought, well, maybe he's going to do like a barter thing where you've got to try and persuade someone to give you a discount. Or, you know, something kind of like run of the mill, like you kind of described with your suggestions. But it's a little bit more expansive out of the box that you talk about it. And I'd also like to add that I have a little bit of a Jamie Keddy dialogic feeling with this.
Yeah, because, I was thinking that.
I was thinking with the end, what you have lingering just there that could be that prestige, that reveal, is who did his parents choose? You know? So yeah, putting their own, but then they're going to be asking, well, who did your parents choose?
I feel like he's already asked dialogic questions. The only thing he didn't do is pause and ask the students to actually discuss that question. Like when he said, like, why do you think they didn't move, or why do you think they moved away, or something like that.
Yeah, normally you would pause and you kind of go, just talk to the person next to you.
If you were doing dialogic storytelling, yeah. So yeah, I'm really, really impressed with this so far, actually. I've never seen this lesson before.
Right? And we are having a family meeting, family council, we call it, to make that decision. And you're going to decide which is the best place, as if you were my family. And I'll be very interested to see what your decision is. Okay? Now, we're going to do a little bit of work before the role play on the structure of persuasion. And to start that off, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about where you live and what you like about where you live. How many people here live in a big city at home in your own country? Most of you. How many live in what we would call a small city, town? And how, just two or three. And how many live in the country? Just one in the country? Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about the big city then, since so many of you are from a big city. What are the reasons that you like living in a big city? What are some of the advantages that you find in big city life?
Better jobs.
Better jobs, okay.
After the students give all their reasons, the teacher gives an example of how one might make a case for living in a big city.
Finally, there's a wider variety of people that you can meet in a big city. Now, what I just did was structure my persuasion in a certain way that we like to do in English.
Could we pause this
and
for a sec?
One term you can use for this.
I know there was like that brief pause and they skipped ahead as he's boarding stuff for suggestions from students. What I would like to think during that time that we lost, that it skipped over, that he said, okay, now before we put some things on the board, I want you together, just talk about what, you know, big city life, why would it be good? And then get them to generate some ideas first before doing the whole class and boarding it up. Yeah, that's what that's in my mind. This is canon. But yeah, that's what I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, I think that would be the way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Structure is making a case. Okay, and if we look at this structure.
Oh, he's got some lovely board work.
I know, right?
This fella.
What I just did, we open citing.
I bet you he's like the academic director somewhere now. well, actually, he's probably retired now.
I don't know. It's too bad we don't have his name.
Something like to begin with, or first of all, and then we strengthen or build the argument. We cite additional reasons, and we use some of these expressions to make a transition from one reason to another. Besides that, in addition, moreover, furthermore, and the third part of the argument, we're making the case, is perhaps a summary of the main reason or a final reason, right? Now, who can, working with this structure, who can make a case for, let's say, South Florida? Many of you know about Florida. How many people have been to Florida yet? A few of you, but you've all heard of it. Who can make a case for living in Florida using that kind of a formula? Who can start off? Martha?
Well, okay, I should try to convince. In short, I think that the place convenient for you.
Why? I wanted to see that.
Absolutely. I'm ready to go. Goodbye.
I like the humor.
Yes, who's going to teach you? Okay, well, that's very good. That's the idea. And that's the type of argument you can make in a written form or when you're, for example, at a business meeting and you're trying to present your point of view.
It's very teachy at the minute.
Yeah, I'm not keen on this aspect.
He's thrown out this functional language without, I don't know, any kind of eliciting or anything. It's just kind of like, oh, check out all these useful phrases. All right. And now he's getting individual students to make comments. Are we going to go to pair work at this point?
Yeah. Also, I'd like to say, I feel kind of, and he's got a better gorge on his level of class. But I kind of felt that was a bit risky just trying to get a student to demonstrate and model the language. I thought it might have been better either he did that or, you know, like he paired them off again or even had them write down some of their ideas before they did that. Mm. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, I'm kind of between that and whether it's even necessary at all.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know what the idea is of this language that he's put on the board there. Like, is this stuff that they've learned before and they should know, or is he introducing it? Because if he's introducing it, then really we should introduce it in context.
That's true.
So there should actually be a language input. So maybe the way that he could do this, mm-hmm. like, for example, how I did it in my little suggestions class about going down to the beach with a barbecue is I actually, you know, I had the real suggestions that my friends made, the real problems that they raised and the real suggestions they made. Mm-hmm. And that was the introduction of the vocabulary. And then later on, we have some new problems and the students then have to discuss those and talk about what suggestions they might have to solve the new problems, right? So he could just literally have, I don't know, his parents having that conversation, discussing where they'd like to go, mm-hmm. using the language. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be a good idea for us to go to Florida because the sun is nice and whatever, mm-hmm. right? And that's introducing it, but then it's not particularly clear. And also his instructions have been a bit wordy in this stage as well. Mm-hmm. But any level lower than advanced, I'm not sure that I'd be saying you might use this kind of structure, you know. Mm. I'd say, like, this is possible and this is possible.
Yeah, you know? You'd be like, well, then if you might use it, what's the point of having it up on the board, you know?
It's just that it's the way he's phrasing it. I mean, in natural English, yeah, it'd be fine to say that. But if he's giving instructions here about something, you know, it's not like you're going to go, all right, guys, here's a couple of phrases that might come in handy in a few when you're getting a bit of you're having a bit of tittle tattle. When you're having a tittle tattle with your neighbor down the road, here's some language that might come in handy, if you know what I mean. I mean, that's not what you say, is it? But okay.
To go to the role play that I mentioned before, and you're each going to get a chance to practice making a case. Okay? Now.
And I feel like we're getting too much signposting now.
Here is what we're going to do in the role play. First of all, you're going to divide into groups of four, and you will each receive a card. On the card is your identity for the role play. Each of you will be one of the children, me, Alex, Charlie, who lives in Philadelphia, or my sister Lynn, who lives in Madison, a small city in Wisconsin. The fourth person in the group will be one of my parents, and it will say this on the card, Bill or Sarah. Here is how it's going to work. When you get the card, you will see information about your home, Madison or Philadelphia or Massachusetts. These will give you hints about how to make a case for your place. Okay? What you will do is first take a couple of minutes to study the card, see the information, think up additional reasons besides the one on the card, the ones on the card, for living in your place. Okay? You're free to ask me any questions you may have about any of these places.
Because I feel like these instructions could be better, couldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great activity, and it's an activity which is quite complicated to explain, but I don't think he's doing a good job of explaining it. I think that the way that I would approach this is I would scaffold it. So forget telling them that they're going to have a discussion and all that kind of stuff. We'll leave that. That'll come. But first, you just get them in groups and say, you know, the stuff about who you're going to be, that's great. So three people are going to be me or my brother or sister. And then another person is going to be one of my parents. So here's the cards. Have a look at them and then just give the students some time to read it. They'll figure it out. Just look at it and it says like some ideas, right? And then at the bottom, think of your own idea. And then you can go, right, so everyone, I just want you to take just 2 minutes and now think of another argument, one of your own arguments. Okay, you've got 2 minutes.
Would you let them look around the look at the each other's cards and you know try and help each other out now? You'd be keep it separate?
No, I would, yeah, I would, because I think the information gap is motivating. So I think the idea of hearing other people, wanting to hear other people's reasons would be motivating. And if they just knew them, then I think it would kind of spoil it a little bit. So I wouldn't do that. So I would probably do the whole, it's a secret thing when you're handing out the cards, right? Here's your cards. It's a secret.
What about pre-teaching any particular vocabulary on the cards? How would you deal with, you know, making sure that the students, the cards are received, that they would understand that? Would you have graded that beforehand, or would you have put them in groups with the people of their own cards, or would you be just going around checking?
To be honest, with adults, I think one of the simplest things you can do is just tell them to use Google, use their phones, you know?
Okay.
It's like, right, have a read of the card, you know, just establish that in the class, that if you encounter, because that's what you can do in the real world, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so do that. Or if you want to, you could grade it down. I mean, I always tend to, with instructions, always tend to grade it down anyway. That's why I was kind of being harsh with him before about his spoken instructions.
Yeah.
When you're doing things like you're just chatting with students or you're giving a model, there's a lot to be said for authentic natural speech. But when it comes to instructions, there's not really such a thing as instructions that are too simple. There's instructions that are too long, and there's instructions which are unnecessary, but there's not really instructions that are too simple. If you're expressing something necessary, then it can't really be too simple. The easier it is, the better, with any level. because you really want them to understand what they're doing as well as possible. Because I tell you what, how many times when you have a class of 18 people or 12 people or whatever, and you give the instructions to an activity, how many times does every single person in that room get it 100% right? You know, even for a really good teacher, that isn't necessarily the case. You know, they'll kind of look around, or maybe they'll have to ask, what are we doing again? You know,
put the cheese in your mouth, not in your nose. Come on. You're 80 years old.
It's not easy to have 100% hit rate on instructions, but it is a good thing to aim for. So, yeah. And I feel like the order's been a bit confused here. You know, I really like the activity, and some of the setup was necessary, but I feel like he went into it a bit too much. And then the language, I think, has come way too soon, because the language is kind of a functional, useful language point for the activity itself. And now he's doing like a pre-task setup for the activity. It doesn't quite feel like the order's right. There's something going a bit weird there. Either the language should have already happened in context where they're exposed to it and they analyzed it and they played with it, and then he does the activity setup, and then normally the way I like to do it is just before you hit the green button. So after they've done the card, they've come up with their own suggestion, and everyone seems to have a good understanding of who they are and what their role is. Then you do a little interruptive pronunciation drill on the functional language. So you do a choral drill, do some paired drills. So they've actually got it on the tip of their tongue then. You know, they're ready to go with that language. And then it's like, right, off you go with the activity.
Yeah, I agree.
So I guess I think what's going to happen is he's going to go straight into the, I don't know if he's going to give them a moment just to fill in that extra thing on the card, or whether
we're
going into the activity now.
Because I've been to all of them. I know them all pretty well. Okay? Then, once those 2 minutes are up and you've prepared your case, the family council will start. And what you will do is try to convince Bill or Sarah, the parents, that your place is best. So you make a case in front of Bill or Sarah about your place, and everyone else will listen. Okay? Follow the formula for making a case. Once each of the three children has made his or her case, the parent in the group, the person playing my father or mother, Bill or Sarah, will decide which is the most convincing argument and will state the reasons why. Okay? So each child makes the case. Bill or Sarah listens, thinks about the arguments, and decides which is the best one, the most convincing one. Then, after that, we'll come back in the large group, and I'll ask the Bills and Sarahs to report on what they decided.
Okay?
Any questions about the procedure? Okay, could you move into groups of four, and I will give you your cards.
Wow, it's group work.
The best is to your own room and stay with some with.
I love it. I love it.
It is good, isn't it? It's always good to see.
Yes.
Oh, this is it, isn't it?
It is CLT.
The group size is a little bit big, though. Isn't it supposed to be four?
Parents, that's no problem.
It's next to my country, and it can come.
Remember, ask me if you have any questions about any of the places.
To see us. And I think
I'd love to see some monitoring.
In our country, my country.
Very polite. It's not very polite. No, The air is clean,
but
yes.
I don't know.
You're not sure if they're telling you the truth?
It's a big city, Philadelphia.
Yeah, the big city might be more polluted.
Yes. And that's, it was a just a no.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's a reason for the country. Yeah.
How about parents' situation? Okay. Parents are still walking?
No, the parents are retired.
Yeah, but I can offer work in Massachusetts.
They're so into it. It's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a great.
Okay, you have your reasons.
You can see they're building their own narratives. Yeah.
Yeah.
The parents in the group need to decide now. So please decide and tell everyone your reasons right now. Okay?
It's time to decide.
Yeah, so what he needed to do there, because you notice he said that, and I'm certain that not everyone listened to what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
He really needed to get silence. He needed to say, hey, everyone. Just face me a second. Right. Okay, now can all the parents decide on who you're going to choose and tell the other students your reason. Okay? 2 minutes and then back into it.
Yeah. And that's why we have air horns.
Demoted.
Who was a parent here? Victor?
Yes.
What did you decide?
Yes, I listened carefully what Lynn, Charlie, and Alice said about Wisconsin, Philadelphia, Massachusetts. I think that I was confused at first, mm-hmm. but I think that Charlie have the reason. And I decided to go to Philadelphia because it's a big city.
Yeah.
It has a good technology, library, and I like to research.
Do research.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So libraries.
Yeah.
Are important.
Going off this guy's English, I would say that the language that he was using before in the instructions was definitely not well catered. I think this guy seems to me to be a kind of intermediate, upper intermediate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm tempted to say that. Was a bit overboard there.
He should have been watching our giving instructions video. Flashes up on the screen.
Oh, yes. Get those cards. Use cards because they look great on mobile. That's what Tube Buddy told me.
Important to you.
And I like to swim in the sea.
Uh-huh. And the sea
boat.
Isn't too far.
Yes.
Right.
But it has his own boat.
Oh, he has his own boat?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Okay, great. So we have one vote for Philadelphia. Okay, one vote for Philadelphia. Okay, parent Ibrahima?
I had I decided to join Alex in Massachusetts.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
First of all, I have an opportunity to do my job correctly in a town which is not polluted.
Polluted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always loved that accent. I'm not sure entirely where it's from, but it's always awesome. Is it like West African? I'm not entirely sure, but it's great.
It could be.
In addition, I have an opportunity to visit Boston, which is a good city.
Yeah, and it's not too far.
It's
is
not
it?
Too far.
It's a couple of hours. Yeah. That's all.
Finally, I think for the fun and for the job and for all of the activities, I decided to join Alex.
Okay, so we have one vote for the country in Western Mass. Great. Who else was a parent?
Three family. The first of all, I think I like all of my children.
such a mom.
to go to out to look around. It's a good fall. For our health. So I decided to go to the three families. This year, I will go to the Philadelphia. Next year, we'll go to the Western.
That's a clever solution. So one family each year. Great.
Okay. I'm going to guess.
Now, how do I count that kind of vote? I think I'll give one to everyone. Yes, and it'll make Lynn feel good because she doesn't have any votes yet.
My wife and me have a lot of problem because Alex is my first son, and Lynn is my wife's last daughter.
Yes.
And she likes to live with Lynn, and I like to live with my first daughter.
That's
this
a
is
real
a problem.
Problem. So what did you decide?
So I'm tired. I have 19 years old, and when I die, Alex can be my place and take care of his brothers and sisters. So we decided to live with Alex, and when we die, Alex can be take care of his brother and sister.
I like how a lot of the reasoning from the parents just related to like the setup rather than the arguments.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of one of the things that I love about language teaching as well, is when you get all these situations and you see what they come out with and their reasoning, and you know,
yeah,
they like this one. This is where kind of you could say it's fallen apart because they're basing it on their own predilections and culture and traditions and stuff, rather than listening to the arguments and deciding based on the arguments. But it kind of doesn't really matter because we've done the communication, and now yeah. It's kind of like their way to express themselves and personalize yeah. it. And you know, it's fun listening to students as well, because then you get to know them as well as they get to know yeah. you. Yeah.
Yeah, the aim of the class was not for the parents to be, you know, balanced and consider the logical arguments presented
exactly.
and make a decision. That wasn't the aim, was it? So it doesn't actually matter
yeah.
what's happening now. The communication's happened, and that's that.
Another very creative solution. All my parents and tell them. So we have another vote for Western Mass, the yes. country. Let's count up the votes. 4 for the country, 3 for the big city, and only 1 for the small city. So I am the winner. Thank you for helping me decide that. Okay, I will see you tomorrow. For homework, I'd like you to write a 1-page composition in which you follow this formula and make a case for your own place, where you live in your own country. Okay? 1 page. See you tomorrow. Have a good day.
That was cool. That was yeah. really cool. We identified some points for improvement, but in general, it was just such a great activity, wasn't it?
Yeah. They got communicating. They were enjoying it. They were personalizing it. You could see that they were very engaged, and you know, obviously that their English is not perfect, but that was not the point. You know, the point was that they were communicating, they were getting that through. You know, accuracy can come later. He did that. The homework I thought was pretty good, and I think that maybe the next class he could come up with activities to build upon that. You know, maybe it's you're trying to persuade people to come to your country, you know, and then you do kind of a similar setup, except this time instead of the 3 kids, it's 3 different countries, and you got to choose where you're going to go to work or something like that. So it keeps building upon the previous language point. That's in my canon, in my dream world, if this excellent teacher is what he would be doing, he would be, you know, taking that homework, having them build on that, having build on that accuracy, and then next time again doing more fluency practice, and we just keep building from that. And you know, that's how you do it. Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to see really some of the great strengths there of communicative language teaching as the as a core, the core activity, which is that sort of interaction. And as you were talking about, the personality of your students comes through, and it's entertaining. You know, I enjoyed it. I wasn't even in the class. I enjoyed the setup, and I enjoyed the little jokes, or it wasn't jokes, you know, it was, but it was funny and fun when they were talking about the reason they made their decisions. And, you know, what's the key to that? What's the key takeaway from that? Well, those students, they're going to remember it, mm-hmm. both consciously and unconsciously. And the language that they've used in that interaction has a much higher chance of sticking with them, mm-hmm. because they've had these interactions and they've had these memorable situations. If you say to them 5 years down the line, hey, do you remember that class we did where we were talking about, where to live in the United States, you know, with each of our three kids, and you know, I said this and you said that, you know, it's not guaranteed that they'll remember it, but they're more likely to remember it than well, a lot of the other classes that we've watched on this channel, to be quite honest. So that's the key, isn't it? That's the key point.
Yeah, and I think it's also engaged. That it's, you know, like that activity, I could, as you said, you know, we both enjoyed just watching that. But, you know, like they would go outside of their class and they would say, I had this interesting class and we had to choose between three. And they would just ask their friend, you know, maybe in English, maybe in their own language, you know, what do you think about, what would you do in these different situations? And it just becomes like a little conversation point that they can use every day. But then that attaches to their memory and they have that conversation with someone else and that they get feedback with them. And that means that there's now 2 points of memory that's, you know, like webbed together in the brain, and it develops in that way. And the core point is it's communicative. It's a point that you want to communicate as well. You want to have that discussion. But yeah, it was great. And it's a great example of a communicative language teaching class. And the thing is, though, is that's just one example. There's so many different ways that you could look, you know, like that one just had some group work and it had a discussion and an activity, but it another communicative language class, it could look completely different. But as long as it has that aim, we can call it a CLT class.
Yeah.
Do you want to add any cherry onto the top of this cake?
Well, there's a bit of a side point, actually, which is a lot of these big methods that we've been looking at, like Suggestopedia and CLL and so on. And check out those videos because they were fantastic and very interesting. And they culminate in CLT. Mm-hmm. They've come from the same sort of source. And we did have a discussion, didn't we, at one point, saying about whether the lady who appears sort of in between the clips, I think probably you mainly clip her out when we do the YouTube videos, but whether she was just a presenter or whatever. Well, it turns out she is a professor of linguistics. Her name is Diane Larson Freeman. Mm-hmm. She is retired, but wouldn't it be interesting to have Diane Larson Freeman on the show? I think it very much would. If anyone knows Dan and has a means of contacting her, then please get in touch with us or get in touch with her, because I think after all of the lessons that we've seen that were kind of orchestrated by her project in sort of comparing these language learning pedagogies, I think it would make a very interesting conversation.
Yeah. So if you're watching, thank you, and get in touch with us. Leave a comment. We absolutely love your videos. They've been very informative, not just for our audience, but also for ourselves as well. And they've been generally a really good framework for us to base our videos around so we can further explain and help other teachers understand these great and varied ways of teaching language learning.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for watching, everybody. Like, share, subscribe.
If you're looking for more information from myself, you can go to teamteacherchina.com. We've got a whole bunch of materials, PowerPoints that you can use instantly in the classroom. We've got a Team Teacher China YouTube channel where we have videos teaching you how to use those materials. Team Teacher English, where we put those materials into a video form for self-study. And Team Teacher Baby, where I take my experience as a teacher and put that into parenting.
And go to youtube.com/professorrich to see some English teaching. You can catch me weekly live streams on Oxford Online English YouTube channel. Oh, and also you can do a YouTube search for POG space UK and you would get my alpha version of my new gaming channel, which actually just have some trial content on there at the moment. You can email us here at eltunderthecovers@gmail.com if you have anything you'd like to contribute to the show.
Smash that like button, share and subscribe.
And watch 100% of the video and don't click off. Thank you.
Bye.